Okay, in the last segment there, we talked about Colin Powell and how we caught him lying. And then on the same doggone program, we find out, we're going to find out that that the media experts they have on their panel here, five of them, are going to analyze what's wrong with the media. Why is the confidence in the media by the American people dropping? What's going on here? And in their analysis, they do a poor job of exposing the media and leave the listener with the impression that the media, especially CBS in particular, is leaning to the left, when it's not the case, because CBS shelved the story because they didn't want to affect the elections. And I'll plug that story in from Counterspin right in after they start talking about the CBS being biased toward the left and against Bush. Now, I mean, this, when you start looking at it really close, if you know what's really going on, you can catch these people in so many lies and misconceptions and misleading stories that it's just not funny. So here it is, the Lear PBS, the leftist PBS, screwing up a story. It's just amazing. And we've already exposed Colin Powell and Lear of allowing Colin Powell to sit there and lie. I know he's lying. Maybe Lear doesn't. Maybe these people don't know what's going on. Maybe that's the problem. They don't read the news because they're too busy reporting it. That could be. Maybe I just have more time on my hands, or I'm a better researcher, because I'm plugged into a different network, maybe, than they are. But whatever the case may be, they're derelict in their duty. Here it is, the Lear report with five media analyst experts.
Joining us now to discuss the impact of these serial media failures are Ken Auletta, media writer for The New Yorker, Andrew Kohut, president of the Pew Research Center, Michael Massing, media analyst and author of the recently published Now They Tell Us, The American Press in Iraq, and Nancy Maynard, former newspaper publisher, journalist, and media analyst. Welcome to you all. Andy Kohut, start us off with some numbers based on your surveys, if you will. What impact do incidents like these, CBS, New York Times, USA Today, CNN, what impact do they have on the public perception and credibility of the media?
Unfortunately, Terry, they add fuel to a fire that's been burning for a long time. Eroding press credibility, believability, has been a fact of life over the past decade and a half, two decades. When we first started our People in the Press series, we asked people, our representative sample, does the media usually get the facts straight, or do they often get it wrong? And we found, I think we have a slide on this, we found 55% then saying that media usually gets the story right. So 55% was defined as a very low number, and it was a shockingly low number. But over the years, that number has gotten lower and lower, and at this point in time, we have a majority of people saying the media usually gets it wrong, and only 36% saying the media usually gets the facts straight. Now, this is not an isolated set of findings. We have question after question showing fewer people believing what they read, what they hear, and what they see in the news media.
Ken Auletta, I wonder what you think contributes to this slide in credibility and believability.
Oh, I think a lot of things. I don't think there's any one answer to that question, Terry. I mean, I think CBS made a mistake. The New York Times made a mistake. USA Today made a mistake. And in most cases, when the press makes a mistake, they're very slow to admit it. And they actually tend to blame someone else for making a mistake. Secondly, I think if you watch, say, cable television, you see reporters moving out of their normal job as reporters to become what I would call bloviators. And so what you have is people watching them and saying, wait a second, they're not reporters, they're just expressing opinions, so how can I trust them? Then you've got Fox News, and which is admittedly more partisan, or perceived as more partisan, and so people then start to say, hey, wait a second, they're all partisan. And then you've got people taking money from the U.S. Department of Education as columnists without telling the public. And you've got the press not agreeing to be as transparent as we want businesses to be and say where we get our money from, where we do our lecture fees. And so I think all of those things and more contribute.
So, Nancy Maynard, if all of these things do accumulate, as Ken Auletta is suggesting, how serious a problem is this for news organizations in terms of their credibility?
I think it is a problem, but I think it's a complicated problem. Part of it is the public doesn't believe what we write and broadcast a lot of the time. I think the mistakes that show up and the big scandals just underscore and prove their thinking, so that makes them cynical. Older viewers who looking and reading for years and years and years, it makes them sad. But there's so many sources now of news, and the public is taking control of its information in ways that was not possible in the past. And it's a combination of the public's ability to do it themselves, plus their heroes, in essence, not measuring up, is creating a fairly large problem to what is an institution that many of us love, but a lot of the public does not respect in quite the way that we do.
Michael Massing, do you think the news organizations get it? I mean, you have written in that they're somewhat out of touch, that journalists are out of touch with ordinary Americans and the people that they're writing for or broadcasting to.
Yeah, I think that's really a major point that we need to not get lost in the debate over these problems. You know, there's a discussion, are the media left, are they right? You can find grist for both those mills. But I think the fact that the media are an elite, that they are a very...
A group of reporters, as Ken Auletta is saying, they blow the eight, they seem like they're very self-important, and they're not getting out, I think, enough into the country. This election, I think, came as a huge blow to the media's credibility as well. They were taken tremendously by surprise, and I've really been surprised at how thin the analysis since then is. What happened? The whole moral values question. Been a lot of poo-pooing of it, but even that is done from the Aries of New York and Washington. I really think the media have got to deal with this issue that they are perceived as an elite. That's not just a political charge. I think that that is a problem that is structural that needs to be contended with.
Andy Codd, what do your surveys tell you about the point that's been raised here about political bias and whether there was any, for example, in the CBS case, the 60 Minutes case, that issue was raised. Was it politically motivated, the piece that was so critical of President Bush? What does the public think?
Well, I'm going to say what I said earlier, more of the same. We see a long-term trend in the percentage of people thinking that the media is politically biased. Back in 1988 campaign, 58% said there was no media bias in the reporting. That number slowly slipped down over the course of the 90s. We got to this campaign, it was only 38%. Both Republicans and Democrats increasingly critical and skeptical about how fairly the media is doing campaign coverage. Some of it probably relates to what Ken is talking about. Most people are getting their news, political news, from cable television. There's this mixture in cable television of reporting and shout shows and commentary shows, and the public doesn't make distinctions between the news shows and the commentary shows. They see it as one thing.
Mm-hmm. Ken Auletta, you mentioned before the what could be called the Fox effect. Has it had an effect throughout the industry, or is it singular at Fox or cable?
I don't want to put too much pressure on Fox on this, because I think it extends way beyond Fox. But I think they do mix, as does CNN very often, though to a lesser extent, as Andy said, the commentator with the reporter. But I think there's a fundamental issue here. You know, excuse me, I have an echo with this. Now I can talk. What they do, it seems to me, is reporters supposed to be humble. A reporter is supposed to ask questions and not be a know-it-all. And increasingly, when you watch television, including the networks, and including if you watch reporters from the New York Times or elsewhere appear on television, they have this compulsion to express an opinion, to tell you what's going to happen. In the election year, as Michael said, we don't go out and report enough. What we do is we appear on television and we tell you who's going to win the caucuses in Iowa. We don't know the answer to that question. And when was the last time you heard a reporter say, "I don't know"? You don't hear it enough anymore. And I think that's one of the reasons why we are perceived as arrogant.
Nancy Maynard, I wonder if Ken Auletta is right that so many things get mixed in here. He cited the case of this week. It was learned that the government had paid $250,000 to the conservative commentator Armstrong Williams in order to promote, basically, its No Child Left Behind legislation. And he took that money and did so. Now, he may not call himself a journalist, but what does the public, what do they think? When do they tend to mix it all together, or do they separate out the commentator, let's say, from the reporter?
I think they do tend to mix it up together, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. It's all there in the same box in the same way, and it looks like the same thing, although we know it's different. But the one piece that I think different from Ken on this is while the reporters are yammering and talking, often not knowing what they're talking about, what we're not hearing is clarion leadership in the industry. We're not seeing the boldness of publishers and broadcasters of years before who are willing to stick their necks out and say, this is wrong. That's what happened in Watergate. That's what happened with the Pentagon Papers. That's what happened in segregation. It's not happening now. It's not happening with the war in Iraq to the degree that there are broadcasters or publishers who believe that the United States policy is misfounded. They don't have the courage of their conviction. I think that more than anything else, is causing us problems with the public.
Nancy, we don't have a difference on that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ken.
I'm glad to hear that.
End this spiel.
Michael Massing, the title of your book, Now They Tell Us, Iraq and the War and the Press, is what's your message there? That the news organizations fell down on it in the run-up to the war? And is that part of the credibility gap that you're talking about?
Well, that's part of the credibility gap among people who have been opposed to the war. I tried to show that in the 8 or 9 months leading up to the war, there was a sort of complete, not complete, but general capitulation of the media to the administration. And this is another issue that, in terms of press performance, that often gets lost. I mean, it's sort of the relationship of the press to people in power. One thing, when the press does do its job, when it stands up there and it questions the president like it should, or it shows that there were mistakes in Colin Powell's speech, the public doesn't like that either. That contributes to a diminishment in the press's favorability ratings. So we shouldn't get too captured by that.
Well, I've got to interject here. So we shouldn't get too captured by that, because the people don't like to be informed when their government is conning them. They don't. How do you know that? Is one question I would ask if I was interviewing this media analyst, and I would say, well, who cares if the people like it or not? That's not what news is for. I mean, you're not supposed to report the news based upon how the people are going to like it or not. You're supposed to report the news. That's what journalism is, at least in my opinion. Anymore, it doesn't look like that's the case. You have to worry about, well, the people won't like the news if we tell them the truth. What are you, nuts? This is crazy. Ridiculous. On with the show.
I would like to see more hard-hitting journalism, and I think that if the press had done more of that in the lead-up to the war, it's possible we would not be in quite the predicament we are there now.
Andy, go ahead. Let me ask Andy if on that point, whether the public tends to see the press or news organizations as manipulated, either by the government or by important, powerful elements in the society.
The reporters and the journalists see themselves as playing a watchdog role. 70% of the public has, for a long time, said the press is pushed around. But I want to make it pushed around by powerful forces in society, government, big business, advertisers. There's a lot of skepticism out there. It's longstanding. What's different now, I think, speaks to a number of comments that's been made different in terms of public attitudes. For a very long time, the American public has been skeptical of the news process, the way the news is collected, the way it's reported. But while they're skeptical of the process, they like the product. What they don't like now is the product. And more people are doubting the values of journalists. Fewer Americans are thinking they're professional. Fewer Americans are saying they're moral. Fewer Americans are saying they care about what they're doing. That's a real big problem.
Well, Cataletta, that sounds like a bit of a blanket indictment. Is there anything news organizations can or are doing about it?
Well, I think one of the things news organizations have to do is be more transparent. I think they have to open themselves up, as CBS failed to do, as they acknowledge they failed to do in this report. They should have earlier acknowledged that maybe a mistake was made. They're going to investigate it themselves. And the New York Times did it. They investigated themselves. But I think if we give speeches, we ought to be willing to say who we speak to, how much money do we make on that. This is not to say the public is sainted and the public is always right, because the public is not. And they could be wrong about journalism. But we have to be as transparent as we ask Enron and all these companies to be. And we're not nearly as much as we should be. We have to open up our procedures. We have to, as the press, I think, has begun to do much more credibly, if someone doesn't want to be identified in a story, doesn't want to have a quote attributed to them, try and give the reason for your reader or viewer why they don't want to be quoted by name. And they may have a good reason, and you may need the information. But I think transparency is a very important thing. And part of being transparent is to be a little more humble. We're in the business of asking questions and listening, not making speeches.
Humility, Nancy Maynard, is that a missing and important ingredient?
Well, I don't know very many journalists who are humble, but many and most try to do a very good job. I'm not sure it's so much humility. I think it's tonal, and I think that it is demographic in most cases. If you look at the ages, the people who run news organizations now, they're early boomers and those who are a little older. We have always been considered self-indulgent by other age cohorts, and the product that we're putting out there is considered self-indulgent. It reflects our views of life and not as much the views of the country as a whole. As I think it was Michael who was saying, we just don't get out and do as much reporting as we used to. The world is a big place. It's a more complicated place. But certainly there is a mismatch between many of the values of the journalists and those who are consumers of the product. And it's not necessarily political. It's not necessarily about faith. It's just about life as we see it, given where we are and how we've grown up.
All right, sounds like there's a lot to repair there. I want to thank all four of you very much.
Now, this was the question that was posed to Andy Kohut of Pew Research. Now, I know that I would have answered it. Was that political bias, that CBS Bush National Guard record story that a few people have been fired over now? But I know that that CBS executive Sumner Redstone said, well, we favor the Republicans because they like media consolidation. So we want to get them elected. That's why we pulled the story about the Niger forged documents with relationship to the yellow cake uranium. But here it is. Here, this is the question he asked. And then after that, I'll play a report about that CBS situation that was put forth by Counterspin. But here it is, the question, and then we'll play what Counterspin has to say about the question.
Andy Kohut, what do your surveys tell you about the point that's been raised here about political bias and whether there was any, for example, in the CBS case, the 60 Minutes case, that issue was raised. Was it politically motivated, the piece that was so critical of President Bush? What does the public think?
What does the public think? Well, if the public didn't know that Sumner Redstone pulled the story, and they still don't know because you had an opportunity to tell them, and you didn't. You either didn't know that Sumner Redstone is making these statements, or you failed to bring it forth because of some political reason. So here it is, the Counterspin story on the CBS debacle. And this story is from October 1st, 2004, to put it in context for you. Here it is.
The story of how CBS relied on dubious documents in a report about George W. Bush's National Guard service has been the subject of nearly wall-to-wall media fascination, overshadowing, to be sure, the actual story about Bush's Guard years. But another controversy is brewing at CBS, this time about a story they apparently won't air. And the reason for CBS's decision is frankly shocking, to say the least. Joining us now to talk about the CBS forgery story you're not hearing much about is John Nichols. He's the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine and author of the new book, Dick, the Man Who is President, available now from the New Press. John Nichols, welcome back to Counterspin.
It's great to be with you guys.
Now, amidst all the right-wing celebrations about bringing down Dan Rather, exposing the liberal media once and for all, another story broke last week. According to the first report, which was on the Newsweek website, CBS has decided to pull a 60-minute segment that dealt with one of the key rationales for the invasion of Iraq. Tell us a little bit about the story CBS apparently won't be airing.
Well, as we understand it, CBS did a six-month investigation into the administration's efforts to sell the war in Iraq before the war actually began. And what CBS did was look at a lot of the documents that were available and also apparently got access to some internal administration documents, talked to some key players, and put together what might not be the final word on it, but something that a lot of people who have had access to it say was a very thorough, very powerful report that left no doubt that the Bush administration ran a huge spin operation in the run-up to the war in Iraq to sell a lot of concepts and theories that weren't accurate, things like weapons of mass destruction and an Iraq-Al-Qaeda connection, things that just simply weren't there.
And we know that a lot of this report apparently centered on the efforts to get uranium, yellowcake uranium, from Niger, the famous 16 words in the State of the Union address that apparently the administration later said shouldn't have been uttered. These are actually documents that were used to buttress that case, which turned out to be rather crude forgeries. And so the CBS story, from what we understand, is kind of a retracing of how the administration tried to sell forgeries. Is that about right?
I think that's fair. What we know is that it does relate rather closely to a lot of the things that Joe Wilson was talking about, who's had some ties to all of these controversies, and his wife being brought in by Robert Novak. So, you know, it's stuff we've known a little bit about before, in some cases a lot about. But the remarkable thing, from what I'm told and talking to friends who are around CBS and other folks who've been close to this investigation, is that, yes, they pulled it together well in a thorough form. And secondly, they really did have some new information, some new documents, which they felt were very powerful, powerful enough to make it the lead segment for a 60 Minutes program that was going to air immediately after, or shortly after, the Republican National Convention. That segment got bumped because Rather wanted to go with the Bush draft and Bush National Guard story. Mm-hmm. And the theory was, or the belief was, that it would be aired a week later or 2 weeks later. But when the Rather National Guard scandal, so to speak, blew up, 60 Minutes apparently went into a frenzy on it. And it was at that point that the decision was made that they would not air it until after the election.
Now, you'd imagine CBS would say, well, this is a story and it's about forged documents, and we'd look kind of silly talking about forged documents at this point. But their rationale is very different than that, isn't it, for not airing this story?
No, they've made what, to my mind, is one of the most remarkable statements ever by a so-called news network. And that is that they would not air it because they were afraid it would affect the results of the election. I.e., they were afraid that they had actually committed such an act of journalism that it might actually have an impact on what people thought.
Now, on top of that, if people can even get their heads around that one, we've got the top at Viacom, the Viacom boss, Sumner Redstone, has said the following. This is a quote from him. Quote, from a Viacom standpoint, the election of a Republican administration is a better deal because the Republican administration has stood for many things we believe in, deregulation and so on. The Democrats are not bad people, but from a Viacom standpoint, we believe the election of a Republican administration is better for our company. Close quote. Now, he's arguably right about media policy under Republican administration. Who is the audience for Redstone's message, do you think? Who's hearing that?
Oh, I think that was a message telegraphed directly to the Bush administration. I think Sumner Redstone has a whole political staff in addition to business staff, and they're watching the polls closely. And it's notable that Redstone made that statement initially outside the country, but then repeated it several times in interviews with U.S. media outlets. And so he had no qualms about it being broadly disseminated. And he began making this statement in different settings at the point where Bush began to open up a relatively substantial poll lead over John Kerry. I think Sumner Redstone wanted to make it exceedingly clear to the Bush administration that he was with them. And just writing a $2,000 check, which, you know, all these guys do, would really not deliver the message in the way that he desired. So he thought, you know, let's go with a very public pronouncement, a very public endorsement, so to speak, because he knew that he had been associated in the minds of some of the Bush people with the Democrats, and he wanted to clean up that quote-unquote mess before, to his view, Bush got reelected.
Well, let's think, if you're a journalist at CBS or some other Viacom property, the boss is saying that George W. Bush is better for the company. We often hear from reporters who say, no one tells me what to do, but what does a message like that mean to a reporter?
Well, I think that's the key thing. Many of our friends on the left and the right like to talk about conspiracies. But the fact of the matter is, you don't need to have a conspiracy. You don't have to have two people sit down and plot out a strategy. If the boss says that he personally thinks it's really important to the company that somebody gets elected, no working reporter is going to miss that information. Inside a news operation, and I've worked in a lot of them, the communication about what the upper echelons of the company have to say is intense. It's always, you know, flying around in emails and office gossip. So everybody knows what Redstone said, and everybody knows that they're not going to get, you know, nobody's going to come in and say, okay, no more bad stories about Bush or no more good stories about Kerry. But that subtly there will be a pressure that, you know, look, it's not smart to go out on a limb. Why fight like crazy to put an important story on 60 Minutes when you're already under attack for the rather stuff and when you know that the upper echelons of the company would prefer that Bush not be offended?
Now, finally, John Nichols, you wrote some pretty strong words about this on the Nation's website. I just want to read a little clip here. Quote, a network that worries about whether its reports will offend the people who are in power is no longer practicing journalism, close quote. In terms of long-term damage, how would you rate this decision at CBS? How big is this?
I think it's a hugely damaging period for CBS, the rather controversy followed by this decision. It's awful. Now, one of the tragedies is that in our media today, we don't cover developments like this very well. And so an awful lot of Americans don't know, even now, that this story has been killed. And I think it's very important for those of us who keep an eye on journalism and keep an eye on media in this country to talk a lot about it. I hope CBS does feel some pain as a result of this decision. I'm very glad MoveOn.org has started a campaign to flood CBS with telephone calls and emails demanding that they air the report. And I think that's very good. I hope that all kinds of activists, and not Democrats, not just liberals, but people who care about a free flow of information in this country, let CBS know that they've done something that is fundamentally wrong, fundamentally unjournalistic, and most importantly, that undermines the whole structure that Jefferson and Madison intended for a democracy, which was that if there was any time when journalists ought to produce dangerous, scary, challenging, controversial reports, it is on the eve of an election, because that is when the people ought to know all of the information, not just a skewed segment of it that satisfies a corporate CEO.
We've been speaking with John Nichols. He's the editor of the editorial page of the Madison, Wisconsin Capital Times. He's also the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine. And his new book, Dick, The Man Who Is President, is available now from the New Press. John Nichols, thanks for joining us this week on Counterspin.
It's an honor. I love what you guys do.
Well, I love what Counterspin does, too. Now, one of the things that I have for a goal is to expose the media as the problem in the political process, because they are certainly probably the biggest problem, because, you know, an uninformed body politic doesn't know what to do. They have to have information, and they're not getting it. They're simply not getting it. Why aren't they getting it? Because the media outlets, including books and magazines and newspapers, radio and television, are almost all owned by a few people. And these people are Wall Street bankers, they're CIA executive directors, they're on the Council for Foreign Relations, they're on the Trilateral Commission, they're the Bilderbergs. These are the powers that be. And that's why they like the idea of deregulation of the media. That's why they like the abolishment of the Fairness Doctrine. That's why they like these things, because then they can misinform, uninform, confuse people. And it'll take somebody that's very astute to analyze their lies and let people know about them. And that's the purpose of the Grassroots Infomedias of the People radio show, or at least part of it. You know, we're sort of radical. A radical has been demonized in the popular vernacular. It has a negative connotation, but really what radical means is root cause. And the root cause of Bush being elected is vote fraud, for one thing, and for another thing, the obfuscations that are being created by our media. It's not journalism. It's propaganda, and it's a bunch of baloney. And I guess I'll wrap it up with that. To remind you, if you think this is a good radio show and it's worthwhile, fund it. Go on over to the freedomisforeverybody.org website, which is the Grassroots Infomedias of the People radio show website, and click on that donate button and help us out. People are helping out with $25, $50, $100, even $200. If you think it's worthwhile, help it out and make sure it stays on. Thanks for listening.